If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Henry Melcher. I'm a supervising producer at Late Night with Seth Meyers.
And I'm Sal Gentile. I'm the Closer Look supervising writer for Late Night with Seth Meyers.
So last year we had a podcast segment called Midterm Cram where we talked about the midterms. The midterms are of course over and the new Congress is seated. So we have a new podcast where we will continue to talk about politics and we're going to call it Late Night Cram. Obviously our show covers politics every night. And if you work at the show, you know that oftentimes you will just find Sal and me in the hallway just continuing to talk about politics.
Yes.
And most people just look at us, roll their eyes, and keep walking.
And then we figured instead of allowing people to walk by and roll their eyes, we should record it and make them listen to it.
That's exactly right. So this is the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast where we will just continue to annoy people we work with more political talk.
Yes.
And in today's episode, we talked to Heather Cagle. She is a congressional reporter for Politico. And we talked to her about what is going on in Congress because all of us spent about a year talking about the midterms, and then the midterms happened, and then this new Congress was seated, and then we just all started talking about the shutdown and Trump's wall and just Trump's crazy tweet. So we want to talk to her about what is actually going on behind the scenes in Congress.
Yeah, to get a sense of whether anybody even knows what the wall is, what the president of the United States wants them to do, what they're supposed to be doing, and whether or not they can dig themselves out of the sort of shutdown mentality and get back to the substantive agenda they wanted to talk about in the first place.
So it turns out it's just as confusing and wild and unprecedented and bizarre for congressional members as it is for all of us watching.
But there is one man who can single-handedly solve the problem, as we will discuss, and that is the revolutionary candidacy of former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. Most of the podcast is just sort of us getting ready for the inevitable Howard Schultz.
We want to lay the groundwork now. We did get a copy of his book, and it's called From the Ground Up.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
That's such a bad pun, because you never hear somebody say, here's a coffee ground.
There was a whole team of strategists and marketing people being like, is it from the grounds up or from the ground up?
And they're the same people who said, go do your first event at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. Those people will love you. No one's going
to
yell at you.
Yeah. Go to the literal heart of Manhattan.
Yes. And declare your centrist independent campaign for president and spend most of the time attacking liberal Democrats. Okay. So without further ado, here's Heather.
Hey, we are here with Heather Cagle, a congressional reporter for Politico. She's Skyping in from D.C. So, Heather, for the past year, everyone has been talking about the midterms. We had a whole podcast about the midterms, and we talked about what issues people were running on, what the races were shaping up to look like. And then there were these historic wins in November. And then this new Congress gets seated. It's historic in many ways. And then the shutdown happens, and suddenly we're not really talking about what's going on in Congress anymore. So as a reporter in D.C. covering Congress, what have these first few weeks been like? What's the scene in D.C.?
Well, I think honestly, it's a lot of frustration on the Hill. I mean, so you have all these newbies, like think about it. House Democrats flipped, I think, 40 seats or so. Mm-hmm. So you've got all these newbies. Everyone was paying a ton of attention to them on the campaign trail. They were the rock stars in their districts they were running in. And they come here and they're really excited and motivated and they're going to change Washington. And then the government's not even open. House Democrats keep putting bills on the floor that the Senate is not going to take up. They're going nowhere. you know, the talks, everyone's dug in, wall, no wall, depending on what side you're on. And this is going on for like 35 days. It's the longest shutdown in history. Nothing else matters. It doesn't even matter if they were going to put something on the floor in the House. No one would pay attention to it, like you said. These members, these new members, are looking around and they're like, man, I have nothing to go back home and tell these folks that sent me here that I'm doing other than like trying to end this shutdown. But what role am I playing? Because I'm the lowest on the totem pole. You know what I mean? And
totally.
So, and like for reporters, it's a similar situation because we've been literally asking the same questions for 35, 40 days in a row. And you have to find a different way to write the same story almost every day because nothing was happening, you know? And so I think everyone, when the government reopened last week, even though it's for 3 weeks, everyone just like breathed a sigh of relief and they're like, whew, okay, maybe we can all take a breath and maybe in 3 weeks we'll get past this and like can move on to other things because everyone is, you know, just ready to focus on something else.
You mean you didn't enjoy spending 3 weeks writing about how walls work because wheels work?
It's okay. So when you cover Capitol Hill, like both sides have their talking points and they just repeat them over and over and over again. And so, I mean, even the lawmakers who are used to like going on TV shows or talking to reporters or whatever, like they get tired of their own talking points. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They come up with these like pithy phrases that they're like, oh yeah, this one's great. And, you know, it'll definitely make it into the newspaper. And sometimes you'll have lawmakers be like, make sure you use that quote. That's a good one. I've been working on that one. But then like 3 weeks later, they're saying the same quote, you know, and you're like, well, I can't put this quote in there again. You know, you've already said this.
What are some of the worst, like, pithy quotes you get? Like, types of comments? I'm not going to make you name names or anything, but, like, as a reporter, what are the most annoying cliched things to hear? What have they been over the past few weeks?
So we have a running list of ones that are the worst. I think my two least favorite are kick the can down the road,
which
everyone says. And it's like, guys, can we not all get in a room and come up with a new way to say this?
I would just like to say,
hand it out?
For the record, never in my life have I ever seen a human being literally kick a can down a road.
The other one that's really bad that I hear all the time is when you ask, how are you going to like reopen the government and also do all these other things, for example, and they'll be like, well, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. That is so, that one is the worst.
Yeah.
And I was sitting down with a new freshman who I will not name, but he was saying the other day that he hears these senior lawmakers, like Democrats, like talk and Republicans, and he's like, no wonder people can't relate to it. Like, for instance, Democrats say when they talk about Trump and the administration, they're like, this is an assault on our institutions. And this lawmaker was like, you know, no one goes to the polls to vote to save our institutions, right? Like, that's not getting people out to vote for me in my district. Like, we really need to think about how we're talking to people and trying to relate to people. And, you know, I mean, he was just generally frustrated because he, like I said, ran this race. People paid a lot of attention to him and they all come here and everyone's like, okay, you helped us win the majority. Now go sit down and be quiet.
Yeah. What is that like generational divide been like in DC? Because it seems like there's this massive split between kind of the priorities of the people who've been there for a while and then these new members. I mean, and also just like interpersonally, what is it like? I mean, I read that like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was going to lead like Twitter lessons at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that happened. All the days seem to blur together lately, but that happened last week, I think. Yeah, she hosted a social media session for a lot of the older members who, and maybe some younger members too, I don't know, but Democrats in general who like don't know how to use social media the way that she does. And she was kind of like, here's what I do. Here's how I make macaroni and cheese in my apartment on Instagram. And people really relate to that, you know?
I'm not really sure it's possible for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to fully convey her natural gifts and talents to the other, like, older members, like, just by giving them a Twitter lesson. That's like LeBron trying to teach Steny Hoyer how to dunk a basketball. Like, there's only so much LeBron can do.
I was just going to make a joke about an older member, and it literally was also Steny Hoyer.
It's just Steny Hoyer.
I was going to say...
Why are you guys picking on Steny Hoyer?
Look, Steny's fine. I literally don't know anything about
Steny. Also
Steny's
sounds
record.
Just like, if your name is Steny, you're born, like, 65. The dynamic you explained actually seems to me like a perfect microcosm in a lot of ways of the Trump era, because you mentioned all these people came to Washington with this optimistic agenda. And the Democratic agenda in particular, as we've discussed on this podcast, was very substantive and not Trump focused. Like, there were lots of Democrats, we mentioned a few of them already, who ran on a bunch of very specific things, anything from the Green New Deal to Medicare for all to just like preserving the current status of Obamacare to any number of other substantive things. And then they get to D.C. and there's immediately a shutdown. So is there any
do you
sense at all any sort of effort for Congress to sort of dig itself out from the sort of hole it's been the past couple of weeks and get back to sort of talking about a substantive agenda, especially because there's the possibility of another shutdown looming very soon? Is there an attempt to sort of like get back to the substantive things they wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I think that they're definitely trying to do that. It's just so hard because Trump consumes all of the oxygen in the room. He always has and, you know, probably will for the tenure of his presidency. And so I think that's something, and you're right, Democrats did run on a very substantive agenda in the midterm, but I think it's something that both sides struggle with, is how do we highlight these other priorities when the president wakes up at 6 a.m. or whatever and tweets something that totally upends whatever we are going to do that day. You know what I mean? But I think, like, for instance, in the coming weeks, House Democrats are going to hold their first hearing on gun violence, which I believe is the first hearing that we've had on that in Congress since they were in the majority last time, which is 2010.
Wow.
And then we'll see Michael Cohen. He's supposed to testify in front of a couple of House committees. One's definitely going to be behind closed doors. One might be out in the open. So that's another thing that they're trying to shift the focus on a little bit away from the shutdown and more on oversight of the Trump administration and his personal dealings in Russia, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we have the State of the Union on Tuesday.
Right.
So... yeah, it's going to be a busy week, guys.
So there's been this interesting conversation about how much Democrats should focus on impeachment, how much they should talk about impeachment. Not to use a terrible phrase, but I guess Democrats are saying you could, I don't know, walk and chew gum at the same time.
I mean, when it comes to impeachment, you really want to get to it right away and not kick the can down the road.
That's right, Sal.
Oh, my God.
But Democrats have been saying we're going to kind of focus on these big issues and we're going to subpoena people and use our oversight powers. How have you seen Democrats striking that balance in these early few weeks when the government has also been shut down?
So I think this is a very tricky tightrope for leadership to walk, because you had a lot of new members come in and they ran a very aggressive campaign. You had one member, Rashida Tlaib, who even a few weeks ago at a progressive rally was like, we're going to impeach that MFer, you know? Mm-hmm. So these members are like thirsting for impeachment and they want to see action now. And they don't understand how Congress works, really. I mean, like, you know, they ran, but they're new. They don't understand how slow things can be up here just in general. Mm-hmm. And so I think leadership is kind of behind the scenes trying to be like, okay, you know, if we do get to this point, and we're not saying that we will, we need to have a full case against him. And it needs to be bipartisan if it ever were to succeed. And we are definitely not there yet. And so they're trying to like kind of calm these members down and say, look, we're going to do these steps and these are important. And like you guys mentioned, the subpoenas, the oversight, things like that. And they're also waiting on the Mueller report, because every senior Democrat that I've heard talk about impeachment has said, if we go there, and that's a big if, it will be after Mueller is finished and we see what he has and not before then. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where we are. And, you know, your guess is as good as mine. We hear and read things that that's wrapping up, but no one actually knows when it's coming out. I mean, Mueller, to his credit, has been able to keep a pretty tight lid on the investigation.
Which is such a weird dynamic, because even if you put the sort of Mueller report aside, it's this sort of mysterious black box. We have no idea when it's going to come out. We constantly hear the sort of leaks about, oh, the investigation is wrapping up, or like sort of Matt Whitaker like sweating profusely and claiming that Mueller is about to end his investigation. And then he'll make a new arrest and they'll literally be carting out boxes and boxes of evidence and saying, we're just starting to go through all this now. At the same time, you've got many members of Congress who say, we already have like many grounds for impeachment, even aside from the Mueller investigation, you know, the emoluments clause, the fact that we have prosecutors in a filing saying the president of the United States directed one of his lawyers to commit a crime by breaking election law. Is there any recognition at all from congressional leaders? Is there anybody saying, well, what about all this other stuff that we could just like start doing now? I guess they are doing the Cohen hearing because we always heard about the subpoenas are going to fly as soon as Democrats take over. Mm-hmm. Like there's going to be X number of subpoenas. Is there any evidence that that's actually going to start to happen soon?
Yeah. So a couple things on that. There's a lot in that. So let me unpack it a little bit. They have called, House Democrats have started to call up these cabinet secretaries to testify, DHS Secretary Nielsen, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, et cetera, et cetera. And both of them have said, no, we're not coming up to testify, or the time that you laid out doesn't fit our schedule, whatever. So Democrats now on the committee leaders and Speaker Pelosi and her team or whatever, they're like, okay, well, you know, we'll work with you a little bit on this, but if you just keep saying you're not going to come up here, we are going to subpoena you. So they are taking steps toward that, to do that kind of oversight. But the other thing, and I don't know how much you guys followed Pelosi throughout the midterms or whatever, but one of her favorite things is this quote from Abraham Lincoln, and I don't remember the whole thing, but essentially it's public sentiment is everything. With it, you can accomplish anything. Without it, you can accomplish nothing, or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the approach that they take to impeachment. They look at it, and they know that that is not where the public is right now. That might be where the far left is and where voters on the left is, but that's not where everyone else is right now. And so they are not going to undertake that and have it consume their whole new Congress when they just got back in the majority after nearly a decade. And this be the next 2 years when the public isn't even clamoring for it, the general public. You know what I mean? And so I think if you like listen to her, she is very aware of public sentiment and where people are, and not just the left, but the center left, the center right, et cetera. And, you know, that's kind of how she chooses to govern. So
it is true. I mean, the fact that Democrats won a record number of votes in this most recent midterm election, their margin over the Republicans, and that the fact that they flipped 40 seats and ran almost entirely on a substantive agenda, as much as anyone, myself included, might think there's X number of reasons already, very real case for impeachment. Like, they ran on all XYZ things that are very popular in polls, and I could see why they might want to be like, let's just do that stuff. Like, let's just talk about that stuff.
When they were crafting this message last year, the actual slogan was like for the people, you know, and they were like, okay, we need to focus on three things that poll really well, cleaning up corruption, aka like drain the swamp, which is actually a term that they coined in like 2006 and Trump kind of adopted himself, which is interesting. Yeah. If you go back to like the 2006 midterms, Pelosi and her crew were saying that back then.
Wait, what? I don't remember. That's crazy. I do not remember that. Oh my God.
And Make America Great Again was Reagan, right?
Yeah, well, that's, yes.
That, so he just is like, he's just grabbing.
Which, and Trump repeatedly claimed he invented it himself.
So he's just going back in the political history and just scooping stuff up.
The drain the swamp thing is crazy, though, because Trump tells that whole story at rallies about how, like, his aides came to him and said, we got this new slogan, drain the swamp. And Trump was like, this sucks. And then he said it at a rally and everyone loved it. And then he's like, oh my God, we got something great here. And it turns out, not only is that definitely not true, but also he stole it from Nancy Pelosi. I had no idea.
That's amazing. Crazy. Amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if he knew that she was saying it, but she was definitely saying it back then.
He's not a great student of history, so I would say he didn't know.
Yeah, he's also been going around saying we can chew the can and walk down the road at the same time.
I want to ask about the wall. Trump obviously shut down the government over this wall, but it seems like there's no actual like legislative language for the wall. It's kind of this amorphous idea. Trump says we need to build it. He's already built it. He's updating it. It doesn't need to be updated. It's going to be made out of this. It's going to be made out of that.
Steel slats. It's now a wall.
You can only call it a wall, but also a fence is a wall. I mean, it's been all over the place. Do Republicans who publicly support the wall believe in this, in Trump's view of the wall, which is incredibly hard to pin down?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think privately, a lot of them feel the same way that some Democrats do, which is, you know, we want more border security. We want to, like, you know, keep bad people from coming in the country or whatever. But this, like, medieval 10, 12 foot concrete wall, $1 billion thing is not going to do it. You know, but like they're very careful, most of them, to not break with the president and feel like they can't say that publicly. I mean, we did see a few cracks in their wall, the Republican wall, so to speak, last week and the week before, which is why we had this 3-week temporary thing that even passed Congress last week to open up the government, because McConnell started realizing that his Republicans were not going to hold, that they were not going to be able to keep maintaining this position. But yeah, I think it's very hard for people, even on the Hill, to articulate a clear position, even Trump's allies, because like you guys said, every day he changes his position, you know, mm-hmm. And if you were just like a regular person who didn't live in Washington and you live, you know, in Oklahoma or whatever, and you're just kind of tuning in to the news that day, you would honestly maybe have no idea what the status of the wall is, because like you guys pointed out, he said frequently it's being built, it's already started, we're halfway done, whatever, we need more money, we have to do this wall, et cetera, et cetera. So it is, I think it's very hard for even lawmakers to keep up with. And that's part of the problem is with their messaging, you know, because there's no clear message on that side right now.
Well, you mentioned the frustration with members of Congress just giving you the same sorts of quotes over and over again. For Trump, I mean, he's put them in an impossible position also because he just repeats the same things over and over again, with the exception that occasionally he changes his mind about what it should be called. He said for like months, if not like a year, the wall's already being built, like we need a wall. And mm-hmm. he just makes the same case over and over, like about why we need the wall. He doesn't say anything new. And he's consistently lost the public argument. The polls have repeatedly shown that the public holds him responsible for the shutdown. The vast majority of people don't want the wall. They don't want to spend money on the wall. And yet every day he just like sort of wakes up and tweets different pastiches of the same lines and words. So I have to imagine Republicans on Capitol Hill are also to some degree like trying to figure out like, the messages conflict constantly, but they're also the same conflicting messages every day. And they're sort of like this weird stalemate where Trump doesn't want to move off of it, but doesn't any say anything new. And Congress is just kind of caught in the middle without knowing what to do about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think like you see this in these conference committee negotiations. So this committee was established last week to try to come up with some kind of border security deal. And they technically have until February 15th, but essentially if they want to get something through the House and Senate, they have to finish it by February 8th to give it time to make its way through the floor. So anyways, this committee is meeting. President Trump did an interview with the New York Times and said it's a waste of time, and essentially said he's setting the stage to make this national emergency declaration. But in the meantime, the committee continues to meet. And you can see in the way that both sides are talking that they're trying to give themselves a lane to actually reach a deal that would include some kind of fencing that Democrats could say, yes, we're for border security. Like, we're okay with putting some fencing where it's needed. And Trump, if he wants to call it a wall, can call it a wall. And everyone can kind of walk away and, like, keep the government open for the next several months. Like, and if that deal actually goes through, I don't know. But you can see in the way that they're talking that they recognize the conflicting messages and they're trying to give everyone a lane to get to yes, you know, so they don't go through this again.
It is just It is so nonsensical. None of it.
The whole conceit is constructed around everyone trying to figure out ways for Trump just to be able to say he built his friggin' wall.
It is just all ego driven. It is like we are so far from any sort of policy discussion. It's a semantic discussion. I want to ask you quickly about the 2020 presidential race, but in terms of how it's kind of being seen from within Congress. So we have many Congress members running for president. Cory Booker announced this morning. I'm wondering what it's like covering that from D.C. and if the party is generally excited to see these collection of their colleagues running, and also if the party is thinking about their own strategy about what issues they run on as a party in D.C. and how that will help or hurt these presidential candidates, or if there is a clear split. Us in the Congress are going to do our thing and presidential candidates are going to run on their issues, and we don't need to necessarily tie up and all be on the same type of platform.
Hey, you know, I don't know how coordinated things are right now. I do think there's definitely some conversations among like these candidates and their colleagues in Congress, because these are their friends. These are people that they work side by side with for years. You know what I mean? Like about what could work, how we should run. I think the reason that you have so many candidates right in general is because people thought there's no way that Donald Trump is going to beat Hillary Clinton. And then he did. And so everything that they thought worked about running a presidential campaign did not work. And so this is their next go at it. And no one seems to have a clear idea or direction of you know, what will beat Trump? You know what I mean? So you have all these different people that are throwing their own spaghetti at the wall, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think for like the next at least several months, we're going to just see Booker and Harris and Warren and maybe Biden and whoever else. You guys can run if you want.
Not 35.
Like, oh. Yeah. Yeah. Neither of us are constitutionally eligible, but we are both hardcore Howard Schultz
honestly,
super fans.
I'm a Delaney Schultz kind of guy.
Oh, you
John Delaney, Howard Schultz, 2020.
Nobody knows who John Delaney is.
I'm just saying, he's the only candidate who's been to every one of Iowa's counties.
Yeah, the three of us and his mom know who John Delaney
he's
is.
He's pulling at upwards of almost a point.
Yeah.
I was kind of amazed by how much it, like, the Howard Schultz hate campaign and Starbucks, too, like, took over Twitter this week. Mm-hmm. I think that in and of itself is, like, illustrative of the fact that people in general just wanted to talk about anything other than the shutdown.
Yes.
It is very fun to talk about it. It's very fun to just ridicule a billionaire.
Yeah. Also, I feel like everyone was so desperate for a unifying thing that literally everybody could get around,
yeah,
which
right.
is that Howard Schultz
is an idiot. It's left, right,
and
center. Or like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
What were you talking about? The wall? I don't know. Trump? 2020. John Delaney.
And how Congress is bracing for the Howard Schultz movement that's coming. That's what we were talking about.
I think the thing to watch for real on Capitol Hill with all these candidates is they're going to put Chuck Schumer in a bind sometimes, right? Because they're these candidates up in the Senate, Warren, Booker, Harris, you know, Sherrod Brown, whoever. Like, they're Gillibrand, they're going to have to vote differently than other members of the party would because they're running on a larger message, and the way that they vote will get used against them in a presidential campaign, right? And so that is a line that Chuck Schumer is going to have to walk with his caucus, and, you know, cutting these members free to vote a certain way in a way that may help their campaign but may, you know, not be like super beneficial to their overall message on Capitol Hill at the time. Mm-hmm. Because all of these folks are kind of clamoring to like prove like, I'm very progressive. Look at me. I'm the most progressive, you know, stuff like that right now. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out the next several months, you know, as this field remains wide open. You know, when it starts to narrow, it'll be a little bit different. But for now, that's kind of where I would say to watch.
What is it like right now in Congress? Because these are people who are good friends, they're colleagues, they're running against each other, but also they want to beat each other.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people look at President Trump and they're like, hey, this guy won. Like, if he can do it, why can't I? You know? And there's a lot of ego in Washington, whether people like to admit it or not. And so I think looking at Trump winning and getting in the White House, and people kind of, some folks always had this in the back of their mind, I think that's why you've seen so many people jump in and say, you know, if Trump can do it, then I can do it. And their ego is already padded a little bit because they're a member of the United States Congress, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you've already seen some of the competition, though, like especially in the Senate, folks are kind of racing to support Medicare for All or mm-hmm. Medicare buy-in or something else. Or I was for raising the minimum wage first, or, you know, this thing or this thing. And so our abolish ICE, that was something we saw last year, yeah. Right? You know, these like far left progressives like AOC and folks like that started talking about abolishing ICE. And then you see all these potential presidential candidates. That would have been like an extreme position even just a couple of years ago. You know what I mean? But they're like, oh, this is gaining fire. Maybe I should support this too. And so it's interesting because it's kind of like a follow the leader thing right now. And there's not, and by leader, it's not like another presidential candidate. There's not particularly a front runner. It's these folks like AOC and these other progressive superstars that people are paying attention to and kind of taking their notes from, you know?
And it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, Howard Schultz kind of becomes that leader over the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. In many ways, I think you could say he already is.
In many ways,
the de facto president of the United States.
As you were just saying, and I think you're right, that it is likely that Howard Schultz will be the next president. I think that's a bold claim, but I think you're right.
Your takeaway is, I mean, look, yeah, I can't necessarily say I agree with you, but I think you've definitely got your credibility on the line here with that prediction. And
I'm sure everyone
gives you credit.
But I'm sure people are excited to hear that Politico is now saying
yes,
that.
I think think people are rallying in the streets around this bold prediction from Politico and from you in particular, Heather Gangle? Of course.
It's the Schultz Delaney ticket.
You guys are going to get me in trouble. my Twitter mentions are going to go crazy.
Look, we're wrapping up. It was so good until the last minute. We just, you know, twist ending.
You didn't say it, but we do have the ability to cut you together saying,
I think it will be Howard Schultz and John Delaney in 2020.
Howard Schultz is good at chewing gum and
walking at
cans.
The same time. Yeah. Heather, thank you so much for being here. We're going to have you back to talk about the first 100 days of the Schultz presidency. But until then, honestly, thank you for chatting with us. It's been such a pleasure. It's been so interesting because I feel like we're not really talking about what's going on in D.C., you know, kind of behind these headlines about the shutdown and about Trump. So this has been really illuminating for this early days in the Congress.
I think, like, I don't know how much you guys followed before you did the midterm podcast, like, followed what's happening in Washington, but, like, so much of it, even before the shutdown, boils down to semantic arguments. That's really like what a lot of these big fights end up being over, you know?
Yeah, we're seeing it with the wall. So I guess it's not that unprecedented.
But I mean, it's a newish issue, but for people who've covered it, it's just, you know, talking point versus talking point, and a lot of the substance is already agreed on behind the scenes, but how do you package it? You know what I mean?
Really interesting.
So,
all right, we'll see you at the Schultz rally.
Yeah, you guys, he's going to send you like some free t-shirts or something. I think that's what you're angling for.
I'm angling for free Dunkin' Donuts stuff. I think if we diss Starbucks enough, Dunkin' Donuts will send us free stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you again.
Hey, thank you guys.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime during this this campaign.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.